I'm Heidi Harris. Welcome to the Heidi Harris Show podcast. I do this three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I post them up at HeidiHarris.com. You can also subscribe at iTunes, Heidi Harris Show podcast. Well, the judge has dismissed the Bundy charges. Trial is over. She's dismissed it with prejudice, which means there will be no retrial. Wow, what a mess. What a day for the Bundys. They must feel very vindicated. John L. Smith is with us. You know his name. Certainly he was a columnist for many years for the RJ, author. He's been covering this trial for Reuters, the Nevada Independent, and KNPR. He's been in the courtroom. He's seen the craziness of the Bundy trial. And now, as you know, the judge has dismissed the charges. John L. Smith, welcome to the Heidi Harris Show podcast.
It's great to be with you.
What a crazy case. I mean, the government has blown this every which way from Tuesday.
Yeah, you know, as it turns out, a very long process ended abruptly Monday when Judge Gloria Navarro dismissed this case with prejudice, which means it's not coming back. And she raised the issue of prosecutorial misconduct for the failure, the willful failure of the prosecutors from the U.S. Attorney's Office to turn over pertinent information that could have been useful to the defense in this case. It's their job to do that. The fairness requires it by the Constitution, and they failed in their duty, and it was a terrible embarrassment on their part because these are experienced prosecutors. But the other side of it is that after 2 years, approximately, Clive and Bundy, two of his sons, and Ryan Payne, the militia coordinator from Montana, are out and aren't going to have to go back to court at least anytime soon.
It's incredible to me. I watched this in 2014. We all did. I was not thrilled with the Bundy clan or their tactics or some of the things that they did. And I wasn't surprised that charges were brought. But some of these guys have been in prison for almost 4 years, and they had trouble getting any kind of convictions in Oregon with the standoff there in the Malheur Wildlife Range. And then they come to Nevada. You'd think they'd have learned some things from Oregon. And they botched it yet again with our money. What do you think went wrong, John?
Well, I think what you have in the case of the Bunkerville standoff is you have about a four-year FBI investigation that gathered a tall mountain of evidence in this case. Let's talk about body cam, dash cam, video from citizens, video from the government, witness testimony. Surveillance cameras in the air, surveillance cameras on the ground. There was so much information that it was very possible that some of that information might not be turned over. I'm not making an excuse for the prosecution. What I'm saying is there was a mountain of information out there. How this case got presented was they basically threw the mountain at the defense when they neglected, or as the judge argued, willfully declined to turn over that pertinent information, they got themselves in trouble, and that's where we're at today.
Well, isn't that a normal thing that one side will do to the other, turn over so much documentation that there's no way the other side can go through it? That doesn't sound very unusual to me.
No, it's really not, and in most cases, you know, most trials are going to fit in one or two bankers' boxes. I would estimate that this trial's evidence probably fits in a good moving van. You're talking about an awful lot of evidence, but the difference is in this case too is the key argument for the defense was whether the Bundy family felt as if their lives were in danger when they saw what they described as snipers on the hillside outside their ranch. It was at that point that they argued, that's when they reached out to all their friends and neighbors and acquaintances and those militia members to come and help them. Well, and again, this is the defense argument in the case. The indictment says that there were no snipers, that it was essentially untrue what they were arguing or what they were posing to these people on the internet who didn't know the facts. During the trial and the documents leading up to the trial itself, the government argued that it was a fantastical fishing expedition on the part of the defense. There was no surveillance on the hillside. There were no armed, there was no armed sniper on the hillside. It was a fantasy. Well, as it turns out, there was surveillance. That was FBI surveillance. The surveillance was being monitored, and that was not disclosed. And the surveillance cameras were operated, essentially, or moved by people who were fully armed, including wearing or carrying long rifles, such as AR-15s. In other words, there were armed people on the hillside who looked like snipers.
Wow. Now, one of the things that the judge did during the first trial, Navarro, that surprised me was she wouldn't let them explain why they did what they did. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because that seems so outrageous to me that they weren't allowed to explain their motivation for having those people there to protect them.
Right. It's a really good question, and it speaks to how trials are conducted. You are not allowed to say anything as a defense. You have to have an arguable defense that's backed by at least some facts. At the time, remember, there were no facts and evidence that said there were snipers on the hillside. The government said there were none. There was no evidence to the contrary that was produced. The defense argued, and this is interestingly, attorney Dan Hill, who's co-counsel for Ammon Bundy, said right outside the courtroom after this decision, he said, you know, Ammon Bundy was absolutely certain there were snipers. The Bundy family was absolutely certain. They weren't lying. They were telling the truth. From their perspective, there were snipers. We just didn't have the evidence. And so when they got that evidence, all of a sudden, the tables were turned. And the prosecutors, you know, who denied the evidence existed, were really, really embarrassed by this.
Was this done intentionally by the prosecutors, or was this just somebody in somebody's office who didn't get the right information to them? I mean, did they purposely withhold this information from the defense?
Well, the prosecution argued in its court papers in the last couple of weeks that this mistake was inadvertent. That, you know, in a case with a lot of evidence, this was an inadvertent error, not a willful error. Not something that was planned on their part, but it was willful. The judge disagreed and said that not only was it willful, but it showed that they weren't willing to play fair. You know, she used more legal terms than that, but it's essentially that you're not willing to play fair and you've botched it. And here's why. Operating with evidence that they had at the time, the defense chose a jury. The defense chose to have opening statements that included some things but did not include other things, like those snipers on the hillside. Now, how much more convincing or persuasive would it have been if they had been able to argue that there were snipers on the hillside? Come to find out, 1 month into trial, the prosecution turns over more than 1,000 pages of discovery. A month after the deadline, or several weeks after the deadline that the judge had for turning over evidence, they come up with an extra 1,000 pages, and in those pages are contained FBI memos, are contained FBI logs talking about the surveillance. The memos discuss that there are armed snipers, that the FBI SWAT team is there, and it's all that stuff. That had it been turned over initially, it would have given the defense a chance to at least argue their side of the case. See, this is what we're talking. We're not talking about innocence or guilt. We're talking about being able to argue fairly. And the prosecution, by hiding this or by not disclosing it, the prosecution did not allow that to be argued.
That's incredible. We're speaking with John L. Smith, author and journalist. Of course, he's been covering this case, the Bundy trial, for Reuters and the Nevada Independent and KNPR. I got to tell you, as a taxpayer, I am furious with the prosecution for screwing this up, because whether it's willful or not, they owed these people all the documents so they could prosecute the case and not be wasting my money as prosecutors. That's what I don't get.
Well, I think some folks are going to reach the same conclusion. They're going to ask themselves, well, why not just rewrite that superseding indictment that had, you know, 16 felony charges and I believe 19 defendants total, and not worry so much about whether the Bundys felt threatened. The fact is that by the middle of April, there was sufficient evidence, according to FBI intelligence, that the militia members who were coming to Bundy Ranch were armed and dangerous. And so if they had just stuck to what looks like the kind of, you know, the ball game of this case, the prosecution would have been a lot better off. Now, obviously, that's a journalist's armchair quarterbacking. But beyond that, I mean, it's evident now in retrospect that they overplayed their hand. They probably overcharged this case. And you're right. You know, the defense is estimated to have cost a couple million dollars. That's just the defense. The four-year FBI investigation was not cheap. And the prosecution was not cheap. So we're talking millions of dollars to go after this grazing rights issue and all of the fallout from it. So, you would think that there might be a price to pay, but I guess we'll see.
It's amazing. We're speaking with John L. Smith. I heard that just rounding up the cattle cost more money than Bundy owed.
Yes. That's, to my knowledge, it was a nearly $1 million roundup. And let's be fair. The roundup was precipitated and necessitated because Bundy decided, after paying his federal grazing fees for many years, that he no longer recognized the jurisdiction of the federal government. Now, which is clever, he said he would pay the county and he would recognize the state of Nevada, but he didn't recognize the federal government's jurisdiction. And again, in fairness, most ranchers in Nevada and elsewhere recognize the fact that federal public land comes under the jurisdiction of the federal government. They pay approximately $1.60 for a cow and a calf per month per year to graze them. So it's not an expensive proposition to graze a cow for, say, a $20 bill a year on federal land. It's actually a pretty darn good deal.
Yeah, well, you know, that was been my contention all along, is that Bundy didn't pay his bills. And a lot of us don't like certain rules that the government imposes on us. But if you don't like it, you go to court, which Bundy did. You don't like it, you appeal, which Bundy did, and continue to lose. And either you live by the rule of law or you don't.
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate comeback. You know, frankly, just about everyone associated with the Bundys at one time or another carries a pocket constitution in their breast pocket. And, you know, that's their idea of being a constitutionalist. They've read that constitution and they buy it. But the fact is, the constitution's not some stale document. It's a document that is interpreted, that is interpreted and reinterpreted by the Supreme Court. And it's ironic that the same rules interpreted by the Supreme Court that essentially came to the rescue of the Bundy family against the federal government, those same rules were not there in the original Constitution. They were the rules that were interpreted.
Right.
So you have the constitutional decisions that come down from the Supreme Court that essentially saved the Bundy. So they don't want to recognize that irony. They like their own vision of the world. And you know, they prevailed, and they prevailed for reasons that I think will be studied probably for a very long time.
Now, what will this mean for the man who was sentenced to over 60 years in this case?
Gregory Bolson of Arizona, a militia associate there with a lengthy, mostly minor criminal record, was sentenced to 68 years in prison last year after being convicted of being one of the gunmen. Now, Let's remember that Burleson admitted on camera that he had come to kill federal officers. So there was a certain admission of a violent potential there that didn't play in his favor. However, this case going out the window this week in the case in chief mitigates in Gregory Burleson's favor to a great degree. He defense attorneys to a person agreed that he would easily or should easily be able to receive a new trial. Whether they want to go to trial with a man who is now blind from a medical issue that occurred after the standoff in 2014, I don't know. I mean, will they want to go back to trial? Will they resolve the case out of court? I guess we'll have to see.
And that's crazy. 68 years. I mean, you can slice and dice somebody, chop them up and put them in cement in this town and not get 68 years. You know that and I know that.
Well, you might even get your own name at the mob museum.
It's crazy. Well, obviously, I mean, I'm not going to ask you for an opinion on this. I don't agree with a lot of the tactics that the Bundys and their supporters employed. I don't think this makes them right. But I do think your point is very important, that the same constitution they complain about, they carry around and they claim that they, you know, they have the clarity on it. The same thing, the charges that got them, you know, they got charged with, got them off the hook. And that's a very ironic thing. And it's funny to me.
Well, you know, I'm in agreement there. You know, this is also very interesting moments in which, after watching this case from the first, you know, I followed every trial in this case, and to see the perspective of Judge Gloria Navarro change so dramatically. She was one kind of judge when they were losing. She's a vastly different jurist now that they've won. So it was fascinating to see the evolution of their opinion of the judge. It just happened to coincide with her agreement with their position in court. So
that's
it was funny, to say the least.
When you think about it, you know, 50% of the people who walk out of the courthouse every single day are upset with what happened, and we're just not allowed to take the law into our own hands, and that's the thing for me.
Right, and I think that's a really valid argument to take forward. You know, yes, the Bundys prevailed, but were there really any winners here? You know, Ryan Norwood, the co-counsel with Brenda Wexler of Ryan Payne of Montana, he said it very well when he said, you know, there really are no winners. We've got, it's a tragedy in a lot of ways. It's a tragedy about the charges, but also how the standoff wound up taking place. It clearly affected, in my observation of testimony, it clearly affected BLM agents, rangers and whatnot. It clearly had an impact on Metro Police. That standoff endangered hundreds and hundreds of lives. Remember that wash, it's called Tokwap Wash, it was full of people, most of them unarmed, some on horseback, but most of them unarmed, some of whom brought their children. And so you had this potential field of fire that was filling up with militia members who were armed, who in my estimation were using those unarmed people for cover, that they were absolutely in the wrong to do that. I mean, it's the kind of thing that when, you know, Hezbollah or one of the terrorist organizations, when they hide behind women and children, we like to shake our finger at them as saying that they're cowards. You know, I didn't hear much of that in this case. I thought that more people should have been outspoken. Those people endangered a lot of lives.
That's a very interesting point. Well, thank God for Sheriff Gillespie, who got out there and calmed everybody down, because that was about to become a bloodbath.
Yeah, it was as Sheriff current Sheriff Lombardo testified, he said one car backfire,
right,
or one accidental discharge of a firearm would have set everyone to firing their weapons. And then you know, all hell would have broken loose.
No question. We're speaking with John L. Smith. So what is the takeaway for the government? They screwed this up. They wasted my money, your money. They put men in prison who I do believe did something, but still, they weren't found guilty. They put these guys in jail for years. Imagine what that would be like not to be able to support your family for a couple of years. What's the takeaway? Where does the government go from here? What's the lesson for other people who would stand up against them?
Well, it's clear. What's clear is that it's murky. A couple of things. First of all, the Bundys still do not recognize the jurisdiction of the federal government in this matter. They still don't recognize that. They were asked that in interviews. I asked a couple of them myself, and they are far more interested in having the county or the state have purview over their grazing issues. But with that said, that doesn't change federal law. You know, your opinion of federal law does not change it.
Right.
And so that just ask the IRS if you don't pay your taxes. my opinion is I don't want to pay my taxes, and they don't take that as a very good answer. So there's that issue. The other issue is, you know, is that we've got, in Nevada, we've got a long history and a troubled history in many fronts of dealing with the issue of so much federal public land. About 85% of our state is federally controlled. You know, much of that is nothing that will ever be released. A lot of it's, you know, Air Force jurisdiction and military jurisdiction and test site jurisdiction, stuff like that. But there is an awful lot of other federal public land that, you know, that could conceivably, if you know, if you were involved in a, say, a sagebrush rebellion kind of thing, that it would go over to state control. I'm not sold on whether that's a really good idea, you know, and the main reasoning is the next time a wildfire breaks out, imagine if the wildfires that break out in the West were on state land and not part of federal jurisdiction. And if the federal jurisdiction was so limited that the federal firefighting money was not there.
Right.
So, I mean, there are a lot of good arguments on both sides. There's one thing that's clear is that since statehood, Nevada has struggled with this issue of so much of it being essentially signed off to the federal government.
In the end, though, aren't they going to take everything Bundy owns once he dies? In other words, he's not getting off the hook for this debt to the government, is he? The fines and all that.
Well, you know, it's unclear what the government's next move will be. It's pretty clear in my mind that they're going to have to be very careful to not be perceived as, you know, a continuing bully in the story. That doesn't mean they can't approach this from a civil standpoint again. People have talked about liens on property and certainly the cattle would be included in that. But at some point, someone's going to have to settle up accounts. And I just hope cooler heads prevail. You know, I think the Bundys are a very proud family, and to call them stubborn would be an understatement. So we'll see how it goes, you know, and hopefully we'll be reporting it in the future.
Well, they've got the spirit that won the West, that's for sure. Once again, I'm not agreeing with any of their tactics or their attitudes about paying bills and following the laws. I'm not agreeing with any of that, but I'll give them credit for being stubborn. John L. Smith, who covered this trial for Reuters, the Nevada Independent, and KNPR, journalist, author forever. Great to talk to you, and I really appreciate your perspective and your experience. Thank you.
Anytime, Heidi.
What a crazy case. Well, all I can say is, as a taxpayer, I'm a little disappointed in the government's prosecution of this case. To me, it was very clear there were violations of law being perpetrated by a lot of people surrounding the Bundys. But hey, they had their day in court, and this time they prevailed. Join me for the Heidi Harris Show podcast 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I post them at HeidiHarris.com. You can also subscribe to them at iTunes. That's the Heidi Harris Show podcast. And my book, Don't Pat Me on the Head, is coming out here in a couple of weeks. I'll keep you updated on that. Sign up for my free newsletter at HeidiHarris.com for updates on all that stuff. As we send you off to Tony Scodwell, let me remind you that you were created for a purpose. Here's Tony Scodwell.